Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A tremendous evening we've just had, and a lovely morning too, in just one of those places that you get on grand tours every now and again where you just hit the jackpot in terms of a gorgeous experience. We stayed the night in the Agriturismo Il Molinello, which is an idyll, really, a converted 13th century mill. I stayed in the old bit, beautiful bedroom with shuttered windows overlooking Tuscan rolling hillsides. Run by a family who've just been chatting to this morning. They speak wonderful English. One of them, a young woman, spent a year a teaching assistant at a grammar school in Welling. And there's Matt just coming back from his ride. Hey, Matt, come and join the podcast. I don't know if you've ever been on Never Strays Far before. It's a cycling-based podcast. Yeah, it's got cycling. It's a borderline cycling podcast. Yeah, you're looking very dapper. You've got Chiclamino shorts on.
Yeah, in deference. It's the way that Jonathan Milan's been riding, really. And also, I quite like visiting Lidl every now and again. This isn't an ad. It's just interestingly laid out. They've got a wide variety of products to purchase at bargain basement prices.
You're looking inscrutable behind some shades. You've got your helmet on, you're fully lycraed up, and you've been out on your folding bicycle.
Oh, I've been out. And done a wobbly recon, so I went slightly the wrong way, but eventually picked up the route, which you're going to do in a bit. You are going to be treated to.
Is it good?
Because you're in civilian clothes,
yeah,
you're going to get a definite dabble, mate.
Have you?
But
yeah.
No, so I rode the last sort of 6 or 7 k's of today's route. All the gravel's going to be behind them, but there's got a lot of steep, horrendous climbs. It's going to split to bits.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's just going to be. And then there's even a little cheeky climb, like a free gift, like when you get in a cereal packet, there's like a little kind of like little toy,
you know, but that's you don't get that anymore.
No, because I used to shake the box, put my hand in, and me and my sister used to take it in turns. So, and Tade's gonna have one of those just to if he's not split it to bits already.
Nice.
Definite GC day, definite shake up of the GC. Could be one for the break, stay clear. Such an explosive finale, and it's beautiful,
isn't it?
I was just in heaven. I could have just ridden for hours. I'm actually quite excited you're going to get to do what I've just done.
Yeah,
civilian
first time I've been on the bike. Actually, that's I'm really looking forward to it. I'm going to cycle to a finish. Matt's going to drive the car very kindly with all our luggage. I was just trying to describe how wonderful this little not even 24 hours is it, like our little 12-hour kind of like sojourn in holiday mode. I was just chatting to the lady, just explaining she spent. You know, her English is really good.
Yes, I noticed that.
She was
very good.
She was an assistant teacher in a grammar school in Welling.
All right.
Imagine leaving this place. No disrespect to Welling, but a little bit of disrespect to Welling. Just ending up there, and I was just chatting to her about you know where you walk through to where we had dinner and breakfast this morning. Just
yes.
That little roofed courtyard.
Yeah.
The outside inside bit. Did you notice the swallows that are flying around in the eaves of I mean, they're beautiful. If you look at them closely, they're a bit dissimilar to the swallows we get back home. Slightly smaller, got a little red patches of red on them. And she says exactly the same birds come back every year. She said they're just nesting. They just laid their eggs, and they're going to be lots of little baby ones soon. And they spend their winters in Africa, come back in the spring, and
just
that's
Africa.
And
just
but they come back
off.
Here. It's just.
Yeah, it is. It's idyllic. It's beautiful. It's restful, calming. And one of the reasons why I love this job, mate.
Never Strays Far is proud to be supported by BICMO Cycle Insurance, protecting the world's riders and the places we ride. Head to BICMO.com and use the code NSF24 on their quote page to get 12 months of award-winning BICMO insurance for the price of 11. Terms apply.
He's not wrong. He's not wrong, Matt. Crikey. I've barely ridden more than a couple of K. As he said, had to get off, not on the main road, turn right, pick up the race route, 5k to go, up into a hilltop town called Le Serre, with its crenellated tower at the top. Belongs to the old castle. I'm just riding through the entrance to the castle, top of the typical little Tuscan hilltop town. My God, that was steep. And it just seemed to go on kind of pointlessly far, really, just annoyingly. Every time you thought you got to the top, there's another little corner to take. That's with 5k to go. Haven't even been through the 4k arch yet. So I wonder what further horrors lie in between 4k and the finish line.
Prime stelle in cielo brillano già.
Well, Matt's just deployed the word real estate in a commentary booth setting, which is interesting. I've not heard that used before, but it's good. It's appropriate. It's always slightly cramped, isn't it? We've got laptops, we've got a data screen, we've both got monitors, we've got the big commentary unit, and then we've got to have somewhere to lay out our Garibaldis, our list of results from yesterday, all stapled together, and our big A4 folders that we both depend on. That's probably the most important bit of information that we've got.
Yeah.
Plus all our highlighters. Plus, today I've got a slice of pizza. I've been to the co-op down the road. Big slice of rather average looking pizza that I'll eat before we go on air today. I won't enjoy it. It's just bulking up. Just get a bit of carbs just to get through, you know, get us through the day. I bought some fragoled and half of those are gone already.
You bought some pear juice. And on the front, there's just a chap looking really happy with just a dog on a lead.
Walking a dog with a maillot jaune, isn't he?
Yeah, a little sausage dog. Makes me feel quite, I don't know, just good about life. But yeah, real estate. I mean, it's so what I've done, I've managed to inch a little bit to the right. So I've given you, look, another 6 or 7 inches there. But what we do have is a completely spare international feed soundbox as well, which we can't disconnect because things don't happen.
It's a backup.
But
sorry, I've got
something
here. What else have we got? Bio dates.
So,
do you like dates?
I've given the Italian. So, bio dateri, which is bio dates. I mean, what dates do you think they are? But sort of November, or maybe it's look to me a bit like February.
There might be. Yeah, there might be. Yeah. That's a terrible joke.
It was awful. Do you want to just delete it from the pod?
I can't be bothered to do the edit, but
it's
slightly
really complex edit, isn't it?
Slightly regret the fact that you put that joke.
I thought you were teeing up a joke.
No, just wanted to show you the dried fruit that I got.
So it's just like a food chat rather than like teeing up a pun. Yeah. Sorry, mate. But thank you for buying those.
That climb is really hard. Serre di Pomodori or whatever it's called.
Yeah, it's on 5k's to go. Yeah, 5k's to go. Rapolano, and it drops in. We both ridden it this morning on the Bromptons. I'm glad we did. But on the map, it's just a pimple, but it's going to be super significant because it's about a K of like 7 or 8%. Then it just kicks up quite rudely to about sort of 15, 13%.
Yeah.
It's going to split to bits, mate, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is.
I think it's going to be a breakaway today. I've got a feeling.
I agree. I'm more erring on the side of break, but with a GC battle behind.
Yeah.
You were just pointing out the wind direction on the map. I mean, we know how windy Strada Bianca can be, and it really is whipping up. It's a beautiful day, but very windy. I think we're going to be in quite a stressful, action-packed stage. I'm getting myself into a sort of state of readiness already. I feel it's going to be a lot going on.
Five minutes to go until the start of the international feed. Me and Matt are in position. Matt's just eating some pistachios and looking at some, I don't know, that's emails actually, just life admin, I think.
I'm just doing some more VAT admin.
Yeah.
We're
that good, we can do it right up to the last 5 minutes before.
Two minutes all I need. Normally do a lot of VAT stuff right up to the international feed.
Yeah. And this gets us going.
This one here.
This just gets us in the mood, just sets a scene. Great, innit? Yep, stage 6. Wouldn't that sound good? Wouldn't that sound good on your cycling coverage? Stage 6, then. White roads of Tuscany, the defining feature of today's race. Stage 6 cuts a winding route over 3 gravel sectors into the heart of Tuscany. However, it may not be the Strade Bianche that makes the difference, as there are untold punchy little climbs on the 180 kilometres of Stage 6. It might well be a day for the breakaway, just as it was yesterday.
Sanchez now trying to get alongside Julian Alaphilippe. Sanchez pushing for the line. It's going to be Sanchez and Alaphilippe. And Sanchez gets there. He can't believe it. What a victory from the man from Movistar. A shake of the head from Alaphilippe.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Well, we both sat down. giving it a bit of that.
Yeah, I sat down and gave it a bit of that, a bit of the kind of slightly older chap. Well, not slightly older, they've got a middle-aged chap. Yeah. Just aches and pains, basically.
There we go. But it's nice.
You do it. But like Jonathan Milan getting off his bike today, wasn't it? Busy day that was, wasn't it? That was a busy day in the office for those lads.
It's lovely. For us as well, it's 100 kilometres of identifying riders in the Giro d'Italia from a front-on shot from a moto, which is...
50k an hour as well.
It's quite hard, wasn't it? It was quite hard. And we've butted up against a particularly thorny problem with EF Education First Easy Post.
Yeah. Half of their riders, Steinhauser.
Yep.
De Bod.
Yep.
Piccolo. And Honore.
Yeah.
From a distance, all sit exactly the same on the bike. Luckily, they've got little Jefferson Cepeda, Esteban Chavez, very distinguished, those two, distinguishable, those two riders. Also, because he's got a slightly thicker leg, slightly thicker set, Michael Vollgren, relatively easy to identify. But because of the helmet size and the giant spectacles, and those four riders we talked about, we're not having problems, but it's hard to call, isn't it? It really is. And they've been really attacking.
I'll be honest, I'm backing off from calling it. I'm letting you take the wind, backing away
even further.
I'm letting you take the wind. And to be fair, you got longer the stage went on, the better you got at it. Actually, today you picked Piccolo near the end. Yeah, that was quite an important one to get right. As he finished fourth.
Yeah,
Piccolo, the guy you erroneously claimed to be a woodwind hobbyist. Oh, by the way,
has that been disproved then, Ned?
No, that's true. On the subject of nominative determinism, Ian Cleverly, who we were supposed to be meeting up with tonight,
but he's not here.
But he's on his way to Perugia. We might see him tomorrow, but unlikely. He said, "What about Thomas Champignon?"
Yeah, that's the very definition. Although, has he ever been a champion?
Well, this is it. He then followed it up with a message saying, "I've just looked at his pro cycling stats, so I'm not sure that really applies."
Unless he used to work at Champion supermarkets as a kid filling shelves.
That's possible.
Or knows somebody. Yeah. It's tenuous, though, isn't it?
It's a little bit tenuous.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we struggled a little bit with the EF Education, but it was great, wasn't it? Enjoyed that. There was almost every rider in the Giro d'Italia attacked today, except all the Ineos and the UAE riders. Other than that, every single rider attacked.
Yeah, some more than others. It was very attacking-y, very fast. And normally, after about an hour of racing, hour and a half, I like to pop out and get a coffee. Couldn't today, just couldn't do it. So I left the booth, had a quick wee, texted Jess. I said, "Look, Jess, the racing's too active. We just can't leave the booth, even to get an espresso. It's just too much going on." So, and then we got those. So no lunch today, purely because the racing was so active. And then once you get over half distance into the final third, you don't want to leave the booth. There's just a lot going on. You feel you're missing out, even for 5 minutes. Yeah. And that the race hardly breathed at all. There's really not many moments at all where they took their foot off the gas. And any time they did, somebody tried to punt across the gap. But it was a breathless stage, actually. Ridiculously quick as well. What was it, 44.9 k's an hour? Factoring in nearly 2,000 metres of climbing.
Yeah.
And a cracking victory for Movistar.
And a familiar mountain hill to you. I was interested in that, because you've never mentioned that before. And suddenly, on air, you suddenly say, "Oh, I used to train around here." Well,
the amount of time we spent together on the Giro d'Italia, and I've never heard of you training in Italy and knowing these climbs and all that. So that was news to me. Yeah, it was interesting. When was that, back in your Sigma days?
Back in the Sigma days, yeah. This was a kind of second, well, it's when I was managing the Sigma team, and we spent a couple of weeks, 2 years running in Quarata. Her and my ex-teammate Max Scandri teed us up with a hotel, that sort of vibe. So Volterra is quite a long way from there, but it was a regular, it was a cafe stop.
So that was the block of training you were telling me about, where Cavendish joined you for 4 days, having had mouth surgery or something.
That's right. Yeah, he joined us. This was 2009, 2010.
Post Milan San Remo monument winning.
Yeah, so it was a bit, and he'd already trousered quite a few Tour de France stage wins, snaffled at least five in 1 year back then, didn't he?
Yeah.
So it was a big deal, and for the young lads on the team to have Cav with us back then was brilliant, and we went actually to a little cafe, not far from Vinci. The home of Leonardo, a little village. We've actually started a Giro stage there a few years ago.
Did he live in Vinci?
He spent time there, and I think he did. That's what's called Vinci.
Nominative determinism.
Indeed. Little Leonardo da Vinci museum there. But more importantly, just down the road from there was a cafe that has been, for multiple years in a row, the world champion, or the owner there, or the proprietor's son, the world champion cappuccino maker. So it's full of cycling paraphernalia, jerseys, riders there having a cappucci, and they've won the world championships. So I think three or four times when we went, they'd won the world, the cappuccino worlds.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
But so what they did, because I watched it, I said, what makes this cappuccino so special? So I actually filmed it crudely on a low resolution phone back then. I could probably D it out if you wanted. But the foam was so sturdy and so thick, it was almost like a meringue, and the metal spoon could stand up in it. But what they did, put the espresso in, whipped up the foam from the milk, and then folded icing sugar into it as well to make it have like a
meringue. Yeah. Almost like a meringue.
Yes, yeah, so it's amazing to see. But that's where Cav used to go. But it was cool. The lads loved it. Cav bought us a tray of cakes,
yeah,
and we had these World Championship quality cappuccinos.
Very good, yeah. I've got a couple of things to say about that. One is, as soon as you said Leonardo da Vinci, I was reminded of a book I read a good few years ago, actually, published by my favourite imprint, Fitzcarraldo Press, who take these books that have been published in often in foreign languages and translated it for the first time into English.
Out of print books a lot of the time as well, or...?
No, it's all contemporary. It's, right. Yeah, it's pretty much all contemporary fiction. So they won the Booker Prize with... they didn't win it, but they published the Booker Prize winning book, which I think is just absolute genius, called Drive Your Plough Over the Bones of the Dead, by Olga Tokarczuk, who's the greatest living writer, in my opinion. But there was a book that I think was written by a French writer. I might have got this wrong, called Michel Henard. I think it was by Michel Henard. It was about Leonardo da Vinci, and it had a strange title that was something like Let Us Talk of Elephants and Something or Others. Can't remember why it was called that. But it was one of those books, it's a work of fiction, but it's based on historical fact. And it tells the story of Michelangelo, whose career... overlapped with Da Vinci's, didn't it? So you're nodding because you know your art.
Yeah,
so Michelangelo was much younger than Leonardo da Vinci. So Da Vinci was a kind of fading force, wasn't he, when Michelangelo was starting to do all his landmark achievements. But Michelangelo had a kind of a... He was basically being... He was almost like an in-house artist for the Pope at a certain point in his career. And, you know,
the Sistine Chapel, and wrote a poem about the pain he went through by being...
I think that's right, yeah. Yeah, I think in this story, he'd just done the Sistine Chapel or something, and he was on the... But he was... The Pope was falling behind on... He's quite interested in money, Michelangelo, and like life's finery. And the Pope was like messing around on his payment scheme, so he's a bit behind on the payment. So Michelangelo basically had the arse with the Pope. And as a result, just to get a bit of leverage and make a point or two, he started cozying up to the Sultan in Constantinople, or was it Istanbul? Anyway, the Ottoman, the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire, Sultan whoever he was at the time, who was at the time embarking on a big works program of kind of like redesigning a lot of Istanbul. And he basically hired Michelangelo to come, and this is true, to come over and build a bridge across the Bosphorus.
Bloody hell, fire, right,
So part of Michelangelo's motivation was cash, part of it was to flick a V at the Pope and make a point that I'm wanted worldwide, mate, it's not just the Catholic Church. Yeah. You know? And the other motivation was Leonardo da Vinci had been asked to build a bridge over the Bosphorus and had failed because the water is, the current in the Bosphorus Straits is so sort of extravagantly violent, his bridge just got washed away.
Oh, so he designed it, it was built, but the bridge failed. It wasn't just that there was no attempt, there wasn't an attempt.
Yeah, blimey, didn't know that. I think so. Or did he give a... But anyway, Michelangelo goes over and the bridge never gets built. But he falls into some of the dissolute sort of like drug, opium den sort of lifestyle in it. But it's really, really good book. I really enjoyed it.
I read a book about the... of a young man who was tasked by the King of France and paid by the King of France a bursary to go. It was which king it was? He was really into Leonardo da Vinci. So went to Italy over about a 4-year period to basically try and write the first the biography of da Vinci. So what he did, he found a lot of original papers and relatives and stuff and pieced together as best he can the first ever biography and like you're supposed to chronicle the life of Da Vinci, but what Da Vinci had done most presciently was to basically never date or number any of his work, so it's all on loose scrap paper. There was never in a book or a folio, just bits of paper.
Why is that prescient? Why is that good?
No, but because he didn't want anybody to learn how the order of his work. So most of Da Vinci's work, they don't know...
What came first? The helicopter or the egg?
Yeah, so it's just lots of sketches and drawings and writings about... he's a polymath, what is it? It's just incredible. Yeah. But they don't really know, and scholars are still trying to work out the order of his work.
He did that deliberately then?
Or was they think it was, because there's no numbering of page, no dates.
Or was he just a bit messy with his notes?
Could have just been just a bit of a scatterbrain, couldn't he?
Yeah.
You know, but that's quite interesting. Yeah. So we don't really know what order a lot of this stuff came in, and a lot of them overlapped as well. Yeah. It was almost as if he was designing, that he just wanted to remain a bit of an enigma.
Yeah.
I don't know, but that's quite interesting. But that was, commissioned by the King of France.
Yeah. When did you get interested in it? By the way, what do you think of the... So we've checked into the Hotel La Vela here, haven't we? Near Perugia, not far from Perugia, for tomorrow's time trial. And it's fine. It's nice. Very friendly reception. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's very
helpful. Super helpful.
Tiled Italian 3-star hotel, isn't it? It's one of them.
Absolute. It's
two single beds.
I've got one big double bed, but I think it's just two single beds pulled together, pushed together. This strange... I quite like them. It's
very familiar, isn't it? It's very and we're in a kind of like... We've painted this blue... There's a sort of like, there's just a colour scheme that goes with them that's quite Italian, really. And we're in this little living room annex bit, aren't we? So we've got a lot
of space, isn't there? Yeah. It's quite spacious.
And some art on the walls. Yeah. So what do you think about the art?
I'll be honest with you, I don't sound like a... It's decorative. Decorative, kind of...
It's all by the same person.
It's like naive art, but the one in the hallway is actually quite nice. And I quite like the one immediate to your left, which is a little bit more abstract, which I quite like. I like that.
A bit of Munch about it, isn't it?
Yeah, totally, especially the colours at the top. Yeah. Big fan of Munch, by the way.
Brilliant.
Love his stuff, actually.
Have you been to the museum in Oslo?
No. They've put a load... He's got so much work.
My father-in-law went there, he hated it.
Why?
I think he thinks that Munch is quite
overrated or
miserable.
He was very poorly for a lot of his life, and saw a lot of death. But one of his brothers, one of his sisters die in front of him. So there's a lot of melancholy in his art because of the illness that plagued a lot of his very close family. Oh. So fell into a pretty deep depression.
Right.
So a lot of his work is melancholic. And it's basically about life and death. So a lot of it is quite literal, a lot of it isn't, but a lot of it is about death because of a lot of close relations that died at very young ages. So it's a very famous painting that he did of his sister, it's about 11, on her deathbed. Various versions of it, because it impacted
so
much.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, yeah,
black
yeah.
Black and white.
Yeah.
And there's colour versions as well, and it's one of the most powerful paintings. When you understand what was behind it, you can understand the melancholy that seeps into most of his work.
I think it's very important, the context of paintings like that.
Yeah.
There's two schools of thought. You know, I'm not very good at going around art galleries. I don't read pictures very well. I know all the kind of... I'm old enough. I've been told enough. And my partner is very, very, very good at art and really appreciates art. But she says it's not about thinking. Just don't think. Just experience the painting. I'm never able to do that. I don't know how to experience. I've never learned how to do it. So for me... I find the little bits of rubric at the bottom left-hand corner of paint. Really important, like nuggets like that, that would enhance my enjoyment of the Munch painting. I can totally see that. But I also understand that that's me being a bit of a child, and I'm not in a good way. I'm just not very good. I'm slightly frustrated by my own lack of appreciation. I try. I go to lots of art galleries, but I don't really come away having enjoyed myself very often.
I think you're right. It's about relaxing a little bit and not taking any preconception, because art does different things to different people. And I only recently went to the National Gallery for the first time in a long, long time, since I was a kid. And one of the water lilies was there. I put Monet's greatest pieces that was basically painted alongside a lot of work that he did at that time to commemorate the end of the First World War. And looking at that, I honestly, it's so powerful, I actually shed a tear just standing in front of it. It hit me that hard in the feels. I walked away choked. And thinking about it now sends shivers down my spine. And art can do that. I think it's the significance, it's the power of the colour, the depth of the colour, and the fact that what Monet wanted you to do was to sink into the colour and forget the troubles of the world. And it still resonates and still has so much power. But that's what art can do, the power of art.
Well, God, wow, I wasn't expecting that. What's the other observation I was going to make about, you were talking about going to Karata or thereabouts. Can't remember now.
The Volterra climb itself. They descended the side that we normally climbed up and descended. So they went the wrong way up.
Right.
Well, yeah, so to when I saw, I think, I might be wrong, I have a feeling the big edifice that we saw is a prison.
It's massive.
I think it's a prison, or was
yeah.
a prison.
It kind of came and went too fast for me to look up what it was. So I wasn't prepared for it.
Any of those little insets do, but I think it's a prison.
For the 19th century. Yeah.
Quite brutal, but I think it was. I don't think it is now. I think it was a prison at some point. But yeah, a long gradual climb that was we did on kind of easy days. Not that there was many of those, but just there's a lovely cafe at the top. But there's so many places like that in this part of the world, and we were treated. Familiar.
Yeah. Mark Cavendish won today, didn't he?
Yeah. We're not. That's no spoilers, because people are just going to read that on the internet, aren't they?
Yeah.
Put away Groenewegen.
He's at the Tour de Hongrie.
Tour de Hongrie.
Yeah, which is an ASO race, isn't it?
It is now, hence calling it the Tour de Hongrie. Mm. But no, I'd say quite a few good sprinters there, actually. He's looking back through. So, I mean, he's won a big sprint. It's important, actually, isn't it?
Because he needed that, didn't he?
We were, let's be honest, we were like, blimey, is he all right? What's the score? How's his form? What's his condition like? But he's been training hard and focused. And yeah, still a little bit away from the Tour, but he's going to be happy with that, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And on we go. Yeah, so we got to the end of the day stage, and we got a bit scrappy getting away from the finish line today.
More than scrappy, because it's a lot going on. So first off,
you had your laptop open. You were doing VAT admin.
I was doing VAT admin, company's house admin, and then there's a load of it's a very small town where it finished, wasn't it? So it was all blocked off as it normally is. So we had to find a long way out, and we actually ended up on the Storato, and it's a hot day, so you had the window open, all this dust came in on my and I've only just got that laptop. I was a bit precious. Can you just wind the window up? Put the aircon on. Then of course we had Massey in the back as well.
Yeah,
it was all, it's a lot going on, wasn't there?
Yeah.
And I started
feeling single track and then everywhere we went, because everyone's sort of beetling around trying to get round the town on these
so there's a lot of like,
oh no, come around the corner and there's a white van coming towards you, and there's a lot of like, who's gonna blink first here, who's gonna reverse back. So it's a little bit fraught and kind of annoying, but you know, we got that. But it's one of the shortest transfers I've ever known on a Grand Tour. So actually, when we got out of town, it didn't take us that long. It's
40 minutes total,
yeah,
wasn't it? It was really nice. And then we learned our joy was kind of like meet just set fire to by Massey in the back. He said, oh by the way, 3 hours tomorrow and then 4 the next. And we were like, oh Christ.
After the Perugia title, I got 3 hour transfer and then 4 hours the next day. So that after Perugia, we go to
Pravo di Tivo.
Don't know whether we're staying up at the top. I don't know whether we're staying up the top or down the bottom, who knows. But it's a long way away. And then the next day we're Napoli, right?
Yes.
And then we're in Napoli for 2 nights. Yes. Get some washing done, because I'm beginning to hum a bit.
Apparently the hotel's all right.
In Naples?
Yeah.
Because we've had some old ropey ones in Naples,
haven't
we?
Borderline, I mean, more than borderline terrifying.
Yeah.
But because it's I do like it, but it's proper edges. It's kind of like, it's a bit of Sicily on the mainland. It's got that kind of vibe, that really kind of dirty, grimy, but still, like, it's as Italian as you can get, isn't it? And it's edgy. I like it, but also, I also want to kind of feel safe. Do you remember that?
I crashed.
Yeah, I've actually crashed on the pod somehow.
I've had a lager incident on a beige on a beige chair.
Sod it.
What were you going to say?
Do you remember our escape from? We did it like a. It was like it from Napoli the other year. The last year or the year before?
Cobbled climb
in a little car.
A little car.
And it was like being in a film.
Yeah,
wasn't it? You know, like it's like in James Bond knocking over the fruit sellers and that sort of stuff.
Did we do?
I think we live podded it.
It was quite fun. Yes, I think you're right.
Yeah. It was quite exciting.
Did we do the Giro in a Cinquecento?
We did, albeit a swollen one.
Yeah, but still,
it was small, wasn't it? It was a bit. Even getting the Brompton in was a bit of a nightmare, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Everything just packed up to the gunnels. Yeah. But I remember that one.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for lending me the Brompton this morning, by the way. That was good.
Worries, yeah. Well, I thought it just everything just fell. Like, we were not very far from 6-7 Ks from the finish line. And I was determined to get up early because I'd missed a day of sport.
Yeah.
So I was determined to get up early.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I'm going to drive in, so why don't you have it? And
yeah.
And how did you find the little ride?
Yeah, I loved it. I did actually really enjoy it, and I was quite surprised I managed to get up that climb without getting off and pushing.
Pretty steep, wasn't it?
You know the bit. Well, if you've seen the stage, there's the bit where Alaphilippe really tries to break him, like in that top section where there's a lot of crowd and a really, really narrow road. That was the hardest bit because that was just totally unexpected. You turn around the corner and you kind of think you're at the top because you can see, and then you could turn around the corner. It's just hidden from sight, and then boof, kind of about 150 meters of it.
Yeah.
And that's when I started. I mean, the road was clear, and there were no spectators. I was tacking, Mac. I was doing the old tacking thing from side to side.
Was your breathing quite clearly audible?
It, from miles away across the valley. Yeah, yeah. But it's good. They're just great bikes, aren't they?
They are good, mate. Glad you got a bit of a spin on it, mate.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll. This has been quite a restrained pod by our standards, I think.
Well, I think
I'm quite tired today.
But we've gone off on a slightly different tangent, but I think this is quite small.
There's room for that.
There is. And I think now we've, what was it? What was that stage six? Maths. So tomorrow, after tomorrow's stage,
third.
I know. And that's quite a big lump of the race done, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It really is.
It's quite significant. But I'm a bit puffed out too, so a bit of an early one for me tonight, I think.
Whacked.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.